Good morning. This is Long Island Morning Edition on 88.3 WLIW-FM. Heard in Central and Western Suffolk on 96.9 FM. I'm Michael Mackey. More than a century after the opening of Penn Station, the Long Island Railroad will open its second Manhattan terminal this morning, Grand Central Madison. Alfonso A. Castillo reports on Newsday.com that yesterday, construction workers put the finishing touches on the 700,000-square-foot new station, polishing the glass walls abutting the longest escalators in New York City, and screwing in handles on new doors installed to address a problem with the station's ventilation system. The 10:45 a.m. shuttle, scheduled to depart from Jamaica today and arrive at Grand Central at 11:07, will mark the culmination of East Side Access, the $11.1 billion mega project that formally began construction in 2007, but was conceived in the 1960s when the New York City Transit Authority began work on the 63rd Street Tunnel under the East River. For at least the next 3 weeks, the LIRR will operate limited shuttle train service to and from Jamaica before implementing full service. Throughout years of delays and unexpected construction challenges and billions of dollars in cost overruns, transit officials have maintained that the project, once expected to be finished by 2009 at a cost of $4.3 billion, will be worth the trouble. Today, Long Island gets closer to New York, said Metropolitan Transportation Authority Chairman and CEO Jan Oliber. Eastside Access represents the most significant amendment to the Long Island Railroad's territory map in decades. Anna Lee in the New York Times reports that the Long Island Railroad project, also known by the shorthand Eastside Access, will link the LIRR to Grand Central Terminal in Manhattan. For at least 3 weeks, starting today, it will run with limited service, with riders transferring at the Jamaica stop in Queens. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the state agency that runs New York City subways, buses, and two commuter rail lines, said full service will follow with new schedules henceforth. The Sag Harbor School District will host its second community forum on its Marsden Street plans at 6:30 this evening in the Pearson School Library. Kaylin Riley reports on 27East.com that the forum will feature representatives from a company that builds 100% natural grass playing surfaces, as well as representatives from Turf Talents, a Dutch company which also operates out of Canada, that builds hybrid playing fields touted as being 91% natural grass and less than 10% synthetic fibers. The Southampton Town Board has offered to contribute $6 million of money from the Community Preservation Fund toward the purchase of the four adjoining lots on Marsden Street, but will likely insist on a natural grass playing surface, although the Sag Harbor School District has asked the board to consider the hybrid option. On Monday night, Superintendent Jeff Nichols said that the Sag Harbor Schools Board of Education has decided, for the time being, to take a 100% synthetic field option off the table after listening to concerns from the community about artificial turf. Tonight's forum will also include a brief review of plans for a simple bathroom comfort station and possible small concession stand, as well as an update on the parking surface at Marsden Street. If you love the library, have a passion for community, and are looking for a chance to give back, you might be just the person the Riverhead Free Library is looking for. Denise Civiletti reports on RiverheadLocal.com that the Riverhead Free Library is seeking volunteers interested in serving on its Board of Trustees. The Board of Trustees sets policy and makes decisions about how library funds are spent and provides support to the library director. There are three seats opening on the 9-member Board of Trustees this year, Riverhead Free Library Director Kerry McMullen-Smith said. Each trustee serves a 3-year term. It's extremely rewarding work, Trustee Janet O'Hare says. O'Hare, serving her second term on the board, is currently its president. Southampton Village's mayor allegedly turned the village administrator's life into a, quote, living hell through demeaning and harassing emails and by freezing her out of certain job duties, according to a new lawsuit. Joe Werkmeister reports on Newsday.com that Charlene Cagle-Betts, 62, has alleged that Mayor Jesse Warren discriminated against her because of her age and gender, created a hostile work environment, and sought to tarnish her reputation. The lawsuit, filed Monday in New York State Supreme Court in Suffolk County against Warren and the Village of Southampton, says Cagle-Betts is seeking financial damages in an amount a jury should determine. She claims in the lawsuit she has suffered physiological and emotional damages as the result of abusive conduct by the mayor. But Warren told Newsday in an interview that the village conducted a very extensive investigation into allegations by Cagle-Betts and found they were not true. That included the village hiring Elena Kakavas, who was an administrative law judge, to do an investigation. The probe concluded no such discrimination took place, according to Mayor Warren. Cagle-Betts works as the Village of Southampton's chief financial officer in her role as village administrator and is responsible for implementing and managing an annual budget of more than $33 million. She started her job in October 2020 and has 28 years' experience in municipal finance. Yesterday, Warren, who is serving his second term and plans to run for re-election this year, called the lawsuit politically motivated. Fresh off a historic defeat at the hands of fellow Democrats opposed to her pick to lead New York State's top court, Governor Kathy Hochul said yesterday she opposes the idea of making it easier to sue individual police officers. "I don't support the repeal of that. What I do support is stopping the denigration of people who take an oath to protect society," said Governor Hochul. Zach Williams reports in the New York Post that the comments come ahead of a rally scheduled for today, where progressive Democrats will begin a fresh push for a bill repealing qualified immunity, which shields cops and government officials from civil liability across the state. In New York City, lawmakers took that protection away from cops in 2021, despite protests by NYPD supporters. The state legislation, sponsored by State Senator Robert Jackson, a Democrat from Manhattan, and Assemblywoman Pamela Hunter, a Democrat from Syracuse, neither of whom immediately provided comment yesterday, has failed to advance in either chamber since being introduced in early 2021. But opponents warn limiting qualified immunity statewide could have dire consequences amid rising crime among rank-and-file members of law enforcement. One of the first jobs that Bob DeLuca had on the East End was erecting an osprey tower at the Elizabeth A. Morton National Wildlife Refuge in Noyac, part of a mounting effort at the time to revive the endangered, locally iconic raptors. At the time, the mid-1980s, there were maybe 100 ospreys in the region, he reported. Through the nearly four decades since, he has watched their population soar. Michelle Trowery reports on 27East.com that last summer, the group for the East End, where DeLuca serves as president, monitored 477 nesting sites in the five East End towns and documented 353 active nesting pairs, which produced 505 fledglings. Just 8 years prior, in 2014, the number of active nests was just 199. The osprey decline began in the 1950s and accelerated through the 1970s with the increased use of DDT, an insecticide that resulted in eggshell thinning, causing them to be more easily crushed during incubation. In 1976, the apex predators were listed as endangered in New York State, only rebounding in the early 1980s with the ban of DDT. In 1983, the level of concern for ospreys was downgraded to threatened, and by 1995, there were 230 breeding pairs on Long Island. 4 years later, the white-bellied birds were downgraded once more, this time to species of special concern, which is its current status. When those species, apex predators, start to do better, it's a broad indicator that the ecosystem itself is healthier, more functional, that needs less help from us, DeLuca notes. This has been Long Island Local News on Long Island's only NPR station, WLIW-FM. I'm Michael Mackey.